Are we ready? Well, good evening, everyone. It is my pleasure to be here tonight to deliver my 7th State of the City address to this Common Council. We are in the midst of a tremendous amount of activity that's happening in our city, an unprecedented investment that is occurring all around us. We are truly on the rise, and I look forward to discussing the progress that we made in 2019 together and our goals for 2020 and beyond. I want to start by acknowledging that we are joined by Sarah Roberts from Senator Gillibrand's office, by County Legislator Matt Peter, our City Treasurer Darius Shanfar, our Chief City Auditor Dorsey Appliers, and Jamie Ziano from Comptroller DiNapoli's office. Thank you and welcome. And welcome to all of you who are here. We have many members of this administration who we're going to be highlighting this evening as I talk about the accomplishments of 2019 and who we are also going to be tasking with an incredible amount of work that is ahead for us in 2020. Again, this year, we've incorporated some beautiful slides. We've been given permission to use this work from the Facebook group Looking Good Albany, and I want to thank Fred Coffey and Matthew Whalen for sharing their beautiful photographs with us tonight that you'll enjoy throughout this presentation. I want to start by acknowledging that no city can rise without the dedication and hard work of committed citizens who go above and beyond and do incredible things just because they love our community. And this year, we lost 3 people who really embodied that spirit. Gardner Lerner worked very hard for many years in our water department and was a real champion of investing in infrastructure in our city. My good friend, Vera Mike Michelson, was someone who championed and fought and really was a staunch supporter of the rights of every person in this city, but particularly the rights of those who were often forgotten, often left behind. And her amazing legacy continues. I know that the work that she did with our fire department to diversify the applicant pool, to ensure that she was connecting people in our neighborhoods with the opportunities that were here, is going to create ripples of impact into the future. And finally, Shamshad Ahmad. He worked diligently and with passion to connect the Muslim community with our city. He worked with our police department. He worked to build bridges. He worked to build relationships. He worked to build understanding. And I know that while it is customary to have a moment of silence to acknowledge people who have passed, I would like you to join me in a round of applause for these 3 truly amazing people who have had an incredible impact on our city. So, a city rising. A city where every neighborhood works. It's what we have been talking about for the last several years. It's what our equity agenda is about. And to remind all of you what we mean by a city where every neighborhood works, it's a city where every neighborhood is safe. It's a city where every neighborhood has access to quality housing that's affordable to the people who live there. It's a city that has access to good jobs and access to great amenities. We are rising to that. And tonight we're going to talk about how we have worked to accomplish this on several fronts over the last several years. So let's start with safety. You know, every city is built on a foundation of safety. If neighborhoods aren't safe, it's really hard to do all of the other things that we work to do. And I want to start by acknowledging another person that we lost this year, Kevin Tuffy, who served as chief of the Albany Police Department from 1995 to 1999. Please join me in giving him a round of applause for the impact that he's had on the city. So oftentimes when we think about crime, we think about statistics. And you can look at these numbers and you can look at this from the standpoint of what we sought to accomplish, which was a 5% reduction in Part 1 crimes, and what we did accomplish, which is an 8% reduction in Part 1 crimes. But as our police chief knows, statistics don't tell the whole story. Behind these statistics, there are still many challenges, and this department worked relentlessly to address challenges around gun violence in our city, to address some of the challenges that drove some of these numbers up, and they had some tremendous successes. And in 2020, they intend to build on those successes, and I'm going to talk about that in a moment. Another challenge that we had for our department was the challenge of our communications division. We all know that 911 dispatch saw a significant reduction in the number of dispatchers, and we sounded the alarm. We actually reached out to all of you in the council, and we encouraged you to talk to your constituents about applying for these positions, and the response was overwhelming. Dozens and dozens and dozens of city residents qualified for these jobs that are truly an opportunity for people to take advantage of a career path that could remain in communications or that could lead to becoming a police officer or a firefighter or another career path in our city. And so we are now at 95%, I'm happy to report, staffing, and we are going to be at 100% within the next couple of weeks, but we know that there is more work to do. So we have issued an RFP, and much like we did when we really needed to take a hard look at our codes department, we are going to be hiring a consultant to look at our communications operations. And they're not just going to be looking at our hiring process. They're going to be looking at the operations, the facilities, and help us plan for the future. These are the people who are on the front line of public safety. Every police officer and every firefighter puts their life on the line and relies on these individuals. And so we need to ensure that we're giving this the attention that it needs and deserves so that we can create a true model department that we can be very proud of. The Albany Police Department continues its commitment to community policing and to 21st century policing strategies. We recently graduated our fourth class from our own academy, and we've learned a lot by having our own academy. And I'm very excited about what is going to happen in 2020. We've secured more space so that we can have a larger class, so that we can address the fact that we need to ensure that we are at full strength in our police department. I look forward to the work that our department is going to do as they welcome probably upwards of 50 new officers into the city of Albany. I know that all of you recognize what a significant challenge and opportunity that will be, but it is something that we are all anxiously anticipating and awaiting. We're also anticipating the impacts of the recent realignment of our neighborhood engagement units. The police chief listened to people in the community about the need to have a more comprehensive approach in some of our neighborhoods to ensure that we're not only addressing beat officers, but that we're able to respond to other incidents that happen in our neighborhoods, like speeding cars, like being more responsive and being able to respond more quickly to calls. And so the police chief is undertaking a team policing concept. And I want to assure you, he has set benchmarks, and we are going to work towards those benchmarks so that we can report back to you on the impact that we're having, so that we can ensure that we're driving the department in the direction that our community wants it to be and that we're responsive to the needs of the community. And I want to thank Chief Hawkins and Deputy Chiefs Hogan and Donahue and the entire command staff for their work on these issues. Thank you very much. Another part of safety is our streetlight conversion. As I said, when we came to you and implored you to support this initiative, this is about ensuring that every neighborhood is safe. Yes, it's the environmentally right thing to do. Yes, it is helping us take the equivalent of 600 cars off the road. But it's also about prioritizing West Hill, Arbor Hill, and the South End. I'm pleased to say that our deployment is ahead of schedule. We have some remaining pockets of conversions that are happening, but it's almost 100% complete. In 2020, you'll want to be tasking us with being accountable for how responsive we are when lights go out, how responsive we are as neighborhoods and you identify dark areas that need new lights, where there weren't lights before, but where we need to be thinking about installing lights. And so I look forward to us being accountable to you. Thank you for approving the position of an energy manager so that I can take this off of Chris Spencer's plate, which is already quite full, and put this into the hands of somebody who's going to be able to be responsive to you and responsive to your constituents. And again, thank you for supporting that initiative. I also know that public safety is about how quickly we can respond when people are really often having the biggest challenge that they may ever face in their life, whether it's a fire in their home or a medical emergency. Our fire department had an extremely difficult year, and they performed valiantly at a number of devastating structure fires in 2019. They were able to also, while dealing with those issues and the challenges and being responsive to the community and the questions that occurred as a result of those fires, secure grants that will allow the department to build on its success to continue to protect our residents. They are preparing to hire another new class this year. They are also preparing to work with us to ensure that we create an incredible training program for our dispatchers so that they really feel as though they are part of both the police and the fire families. And I want to thank our Chief Joe Gregory and his command staff for their dedication. So in order for neighborhoods to really work, they have to have quality housing that's affordable to the residents that live there. Safe, affordable housing is vital in creating neighborhoods that work. In 2019, we provided assistance totaling more than $1.4 million in investment. We helped 30 new families become homeowners. We helped to provide repairs and rehabilitations to keep 31 low-income homeowners in their homes. We converted 23 units that were had lead contamination and removed the lead from those units. We provided emergency repair funding to help 10 homeowners stay in their homes. And we were also able to help provide accessibility to two homeowners who needed to create access to their homes. And it's important that I talk about this because it's important that everyone is aware that these resources are out there and available. And thanks to Faye Andrews and her team at our Albany Community Development Agency, their response is yes, if. We want to work to ensure that we have solutions that meet the needs of the residents in each of your wards so that we can keep people in their homes and so that we can be partners with them in creating strong neighborhoods. Thank you, Faye. In Arbor Hill, we've been talking about the home leasing, 210 units, 70 buildings, $48 million in investment. So I'm really pleased to say that in 2019, the lights went on in 81 of those units, and it's going to be 100% complete by 2020. You're seeing the construction, you're seeing the vibrancy, we're creating affordable housing, and one of the things that I'm going to be talking about a little bit later is about creating the infrastructure that goes along with that to signal that Clinton Avenue is a place where people want to live and where businesses should locate and where we want to invest. Ida Yarborough opened up its newest phase. It's the second of four phases of its redevelopment initiative. 76 apartments, and the really great thing about this building is that it is truly mixed income. This building has units that are available to people at 80% of area median income, and that's what we know is key to a healthy neighborhood. Creating that opportunity for mixed income units in a building that, if you haven't seen it, you need to go. It's beautiful. It was incredibly done, and it shows the level and the sense of dignity that Albany Housing brings to the work that it does in our community. And I want to thank Steve Longo for his leadership at Albany Housing. I think many of you have heard that he will be leaving us. He is retiring, but he has done an outstanding job for Albany Housing, and I want to thank him for that hard work. We're seeing a $25.1 million investment on Central Avenue, 74 affordable housing units. Again, these are going to be along a continuum so that we can create a true mixed income development. And it also includes much needed primary care in this area of the city, as well as accessible services through a partnership with Whitney Young Health and Equinox. We have two $50,000 grants available, again, to provide assistance to rehab vacant buildings. And I view it as a good news, bad news sort of thing that we have two grants that are still available. When I announced this $1 million, there were some who criticized it as not enough money. And here we are, nearly 2 years into this program, and we still have two grants available. It demonstrates how difficult it is to take vacant buildings in this city and make it affordable to convert them. And as somebody who attempted to do it in an affordable way, I can speak to the fact that it is very, very challenging. So if there are particular buildings where you think there's some low-hanging fruit, where you think that you can get it across the finish line with the help of this grant, please know that they're out there. Please know that Faye and her team want to help walk you through it so that you can remove blight from your neighborhoods. We also want to point out, this is what that vacant building program can do. 100 Phillips Street shows what's possible. It was really a transformation in our mansion district, and it is an example of what we can accomplish. But we also need to be combating the blight. When we talk about our vacant buildings, we are talking about a pool of buildings that many of them have been empty for decades and decades. And if we only focused on that, it might feel like it's going to take us forever to dig our way out. But one of the things that we've learned over the last year, with the work that we've done with Harvard, with the work that we've done with Cities Rise, with the work that we've done through Bloomberg Philanthropies, is that it's very important that we focus on turning off the tap. How do we prevent buildings from going vacant? And many of the initiatives that are going to be undertaken in 2020 with the $1 million Cities Rise grant that we received, not to brag, I'm going to say it again, $1 million, the max that you could receive, one of only two cities in the state to receive the full $1 million, is focused on turning off the tap. It's focused on creating pride in a neighborhood. Let's give renters on a block the opportunity to take care of a vacant parcel. And if they do it and don't have any code violations for a year, they can own it. Let's focus on continuing our deep dive block program that we really tested last year, where we bring resources into the community. One of the things that we hear is, you know, Mayor, you talk about all these great programs that you have for our kids, for jobs, but people in the community don't know it. And so our deep dive program is about going to a block and bringing those resources to them, inviting them to come out and talk to us about the challenges that they might have with their landlord or what they're seeing on their street or on their block. So we're going to also focus on creating a good neighbor school. We're not going to create it. We're going to ask a community-based organization out there to create it, so that we have a place where we can, you know, when you get a speeding ticket, you can reduce your fine if you take a defensive driving course. Well, you know, we have some landlords out there that seem to rack up a lot of violations. Let's provide them with the opportunity to learn how to be a better landlord and how to follow the rules of the road and how to connect to resources that help them follow the rules of the road in the city of Albany. And the same can be true for some tenants. And so we're really excited about all of these programs. You're going to be hearing more about them, but it really demonstrates the fact that we know that we've got to bring about multiple solutions. There's no one solution to the complex problems and challenges that our neighborhoods face. We're willing to own up to that. We're not going to try to say that there's one thing that's going to make it all go away. We are going to roll up our sleeves, work with our community, work with you block by block to ensure that we combat blight so that every neighborhood has quality housing that's affordable to the people who live there. I want to thank the team that helped us get that grant, by the way. There was a lot of hard work, and I think that Rick LaJoy and his team at CODES really helped us to understand the issue at a deep level. But there are literally a dozen people who worked really, really hard and who got out of that old adage of that's the way we've always done it, and it's brought a ton of excitement, and it's an example that is really catching fire throughout the city on how we solve challenges. So it's very exciting. They got $1 million, and so I'm putting it out there to the rest of our workforce. What are you going to do? Because, you know, we really demonstrated that when we work together, we can do just about anything. And, you know, neighborhoods that work have amenities. They have access to the types of activities and the infrastructure that everybody wants to have when they walk down the street, whether it's to catch the bus to work or walk their child to school. And so we've continued to host events that help build community, because when we host events like these in communities, it allows us to get a better understanding of what the needs of each community and neighborhood is, and it helps to build that sense of connectedness and pride. And I want to thank Eva Bass for really helping to show us how important those small conversations are before we move on to the big project. So thank you, Eva. It's also why we worked with this body to codify the city's equity agenda. And I want to thank our Common Council President, Corey Ellis, and our former council member, now Chief City Auditor Dorsey Appliers, for their leadership in getting this across the finish line. I think it's important that we recognize that we have to hold ourselves accountable. And by having to report out to you what we're doing and how we're doing it, it creates that accountability. I know that our Chief Diversity Officer, Angelica Kang, and Dorsey in her role as our Chief City Auditor are really looking forward to ensuring that we're using data, that we're looking at what we're doing so that we can enact equity across our city. So thank you to them. We continue to pursue aggressive street and sidewalk repaving schedules year after year. This map highlights our schedule for 2020. It's aggressive, and we're hoping that we can do more, but we really are appreciative of working with you to help identify in your neighborhoods where your highest priorities are as we seek to ensure that we have great infrastructure throughout our entire city. And I'm also proud of the fact that 2020 marks the year that we will finish replacing the black asphalt sidewalks in West Hill and Arbor Hill that were installed years ago. I don't know when, but it was a shameful practice. It sent a message that these neighborhoods did not matter. They do matter. And we cannot allow this type of disinvestment to happen ever again. And the equity agenda legislation that you passed will ensure that, I believe, for generations to come. So, looking forward to that. I just attended one of Commissioner Panunzio's stat meetings, and I can assure you that his entire team has embraced the need to ensure that the work that they are doing is done through a lens of equity. I want to thank you for your leadership. I want to thank Randy Milano as well for really taking on the work of changing the way that we evaluate what it is that we do from an engineering perspective and investment perspective. You really have stepped up, so thank you so much. They've also stepped up in their ownership of the parks. And so this year you're going to see some changes. This is the result of efforts that happened throughout 2019 under the budget that you all passed. The Department of General Services is now responsible for all parks maintenance. They have an excited team in place, and I hope that you will work with us. As I said at the stat meeting, I'll never claim that, you know, I've cornered the market on perfection, but I do believe that we've created a community of employees who truly care and who want the parks in each of your neighborhoods to look great. So please work with Sergio, help us to ensure that we're executing on that plan in a way that makes you proud of your neighborhoods. We were able to continue to invest in our parks. Some of the improvements that you're seeing here were at Madison Ave, the Rise Playground that the city assisted with, and Van Rensselaer Park. In 2020, we're going to be revitalizing Phillips, Livingston, Colby, and Franklin Parks. I'm also going to talk about Lincoln Park separately. So we continue to make that investment. And we need to ensure that we're also providing services for our youth in our parks. And so we've identified parks where we have programming now, where we didn't have programming for years. Some of that was at the suggestion of people sitting in this room. But we also created an online tool that our moms and dads and caretakers can use to find where they can provide either free or low-cost activities for their children in the summer, and every feeding site where they could get a free lunch for their child. And we're going to expand that in 2020 to include after-school opportunities for our youth. We need to make it easy for our parents to see where they can get access. And this also, from an equity standpoint, helps us to identify gaps. And so I really want to thank everybody who worked really hard on this in our innovation team, as well as Eva, for making this possible. And I want to show you this brief video about why it matters. Because in 2015, the Brandeis Child Opportunity Index showed that Albany, New York, was the least equitable city based on opportunities for our black and brown children compared to our predominantly white neighborhoods. And that was a gap that resulted in us starting down a path of a lot of soul searching, of trying to understand what was being measured and trying to understand what we could do to change the trajectory. And one of the things that we focused on was our parks, and not just the condition of the parks, but the opportunities for activities in those parks.
We are at Swinburne Park in the city of Albany. This was our first park that we did back in 2016. This park is located in our lowest socioeconomic neighborhood. Before this park was designed, our kids would come and spend just 10 minutes here because there wasn't anything cognitive that would excite them. And physically, there weren't many challenges. It just wasn't stimulating. In 2015, I read the Brandeis University's release of the Child Opportunity Index. I went to our mayor and said, look at this report. This data shows us that we can make improvements.
The data showed that we had this incredible disparity in our city. Nobody could ignore it. I looked around and saw the parks in our city, but a number of them hadn't been touched in many years. We started talking about what we could do.
The one pillar that we wanted to focus on was the health and environment. This park space is a part of that.
When we look at how children develop, recreation actually helps them develop every aspect of their social well-being.
Not only is it a place for our young people to meet friends, create networks, there's a lot of apparatuses here that are going to challenge them, not only physically, but mentally.
Yeah. Nice.
Mayor Sheehan and Commissioner Jones wanted to improve access, improve experience, and really make sure that there was something for all ages, all abilities.
We engage the people, so they're telling us about playground structures, they're telling us about placement, they're telling us about things that they want to see that they have never had before. It's going to bring generations together to recreate, but at the same time build bridges that we may have never had before.
You want your parks to be that beacon for your neighborhood of a place that's safe to come out, it's safe to come and play. The Child Opportunity Index really helped us to laser focus those efforts.
It feels different. Kids are here for longer than they have been, and they want to stay in the park and they feel safe. It's going to change our communities.
Thank you, Commissioner Jones. So So another jewel in our city is Lincoln Park. And in under my administration, we have really focused on making it accessible and on really returning this jewel to what it was before the Empire State Plaza was built. And it was cut off from a neighborhood that once had nearly 10,000 people living in it and coming to this park. And through the Lincoln Park Master Plan, we were able to recapture some of that history and understanding of the connectedness that was there, and we were able to come up with solutions about how to improve that connectedness and also bring this park into meeting the needs of the 21st century of the South End and the rest of the city. That master plan is complete. In 2020, we are investing $1.25 million to begin phase one. We are aggressively pursuing funding for this project. Anytime I talk to our legislators, to our governor, to our friends in Washington, we talk about how important this project is. It's not just a park. It is a place for our community to come together. The fact that this is a place where on any given day you can go and hear multiple languages spoken as children play soccer or watch cricket matches and try to understand what they're saying. I try to follow the rules. It's very exciting, though. And also the investment that we need to make to ensure this historic pool is there for generations to come. So very excited about what will be happening in the South End in 2020. We're also completing the South End Connector, which is again part of our 2030 plan, the Albany Bicycle Master Plan. And it not only connects the Capital Region to the Empire State Trail, it connects our neighborhoods in ways that haven't really been fully explored. And so with the building of the Skyway and the connection from the South End, I think it really creates opportunities that are there for us to imagine and build upon. I want to thank Chris Spencer and his team for spearheading these initiatives, as well as for his work on the streetlight conversion, although I know that he wants that part of his life to end. So thank you, Chris. And the newest amenity in one of our neighborhoods is the Albany Skyway. I want to thank this council for their support for this project. It's not only going to serve as a business incubator for entrepreneurs in our community, it's going to be a regional attraction, it's going to bring people to downtown, but the central component of this is that it will be Arbor Hill's newest park. And I look forward to working with residents and representatives from Arbor Hill to create Friends of the Skyway that will help inform the artwork, the amenities, and the various things that happen on this newest park. We expect to break ground in 2020, and we're very excited about the possibilities for this new way of downsizing 787. And believe me, every time I drive on 787, I think about other ways to downsize it. But this is a start. So a great neighborhood has access to jobs, and access is about transportation and about proximity, but it's also about imagining yourself as being part of the growth that we're seeing in our city. We cut ribbons at a host of new businesses throughout the city, and small businesses are the engine of our economy. They mean new jobs, and they also create wealth that stays here in our community. We all know that whether we're looking to raise money for our PTA or whether we're looking for support for an event in our neighborhood, we can count on these small businesses to be supportive. And we are seeing more and more investment in our city, which is good for all of us. And we're also focused on connecting people to the job opportunities that exist here. And it's not simply going to 175 Central and getting a bus pass. We have learned how much we need to do to ensure that we're truly preparing people for the jobs that are available and helping them to see themselves as being successful. That's why we hosted our second annual Second Chance Job Fair. These are for people who experience barriers to re-entering the workforce, and it allows them to come to a place where they know employers are willing to give them a second chance. We had 34 businesses, 196 job seekers, more than a dozen people were placed in jobs as a direct result of that of that one experience. And we also do monthly job fairs. We've awarded $210,000 in funding assistance to help residents get credentials and education. And through a grant that we have with a collaborative, a national collaborative, we are working with youth, particularly justice-involved youth between the ages of 18 and 24, to help connect them and help them see themselves as connected to the workforce. We were awarded a $10,000 DollarWise grant from the U.S. Conference of Mayors to provide academic and career awareness services. Initially, we envisioned a program for 15 young people who were the children of refugees or who had a parent in prison. We were able, because of the governor's generosity and belief in this program, to expand that to 30 young people who are having an amazing immersive experience that truly is transformative. And I want to thank Raphael Tucker and everybody at Workforce Services. It is a new day at 175 Central, and I could not be prouder of the work that they are doing. Thank you. And part of that is starting young. How do we connect our young people with seeing themselves as part of the growth in the workforce that happens here, right? We all know it. When we talk about jobs at Nano, when we talk about what's happening across the river, you know, for some of our kids, those jobs might as well be on the moon. And so our summer youth employment program helps to really get them to think about their career path. But you all know I'm a stickler for numbers. We made changes to this program. We made a commitment to our community. And I wanted to know whether we were delivering on it. So we engaged the Center for Human Services Research at the University at Albany to really take a deep dive and look at whether we were having an impact. And they're going to come to a caucus and present these results to you more fully, but I can tell you that it is stunning. As a matter of fact, they were stunned. They don't see these types of results. It's why they went through and had a second person run through all the numbers to make sure that the data was correct. But youth who participate in our summer youth employment program are 66% more likely to graduate from high school than similarly situated youth by race, age, ethnicity, and socioeconomic background. We are having an impact. And the great thing about these numbers is that our biggest impact is on kids who are in the lowest 40th percentile of their class. If we can get them across that finish line, if we can have them walk across that stage and get the diploma, the pathway to the workforce is so much easier. We're not sending them to remedial math classes. We're not losing them because they look at getting the high school equivalency as something that's unattainable. So we need to continue this work. We need to lift it up. I want to thank everyone in this room who takes a summer youth employee. I want to encourage you as Common Council members to think about jumping on board because we are transforming lives. And I want to thank you for continuing to support this program even when we had really difficult budgets. So, we create neighborhoods that work when we grow. And I want to kind of talk about some macro issues that we don't often talk about why growth is so important. I often say, particularly when I speak to the business community, that we are in a global competition for people. So what do I mean by that? Well, right now, the biggest threat to our economy, to our city, is an aging, shrinking workforce. If employers can't find people to fill jobs, they either close or they move to a place where they can find people that have the skill set to do the jobs that they need filled, that have the people to fill those jobs. So when we hear about a softening in the market here, when you hear about unemployment statistics here in the capital region, even though those numbers are low, they're creeping up a little bit. That creep is related to the fact that we have fewer people entering the workforce and we have fewer people to fill jobs. So employers have taken those jobs somewhere else. And so we have to ensure that we are doing all that we can to be a city that is in that global competition for people. Another challenge that we are facing is the fact that there has been a complete plummet in the number of immigrants coming to our city. And why is that important? More than 50% of our population growth in the last 5 years was the result of immigration. In other words, we would have lost population if it were not for immigration. The refugees coming to this community and being resettled here and becoming part of our diverse, this diverse community are part of a workforce that we need to ensure we have here. You know, since 2017, immigration has crashed to less than half of what it was in 2016. And it's even less, more of a reduction here in the city of Albany. And within the next 5 years, every single baby boomer will be over the age of 60. Sorry, it's harsh news for some of us. During the 1970s, there were 18 million new native-born workers that came into the workforce in the 1970s. In this decade, there will be a decline of 7 million more people exiting the workforce than entering it. We have a world-class city. We have world-class amenities. We are the seat of government for one of the largest economic engines in the country. We are working to empower our unemployed and underemployed residents to enter the workforce and to become part of the workforce. We have thousands of students who come here to get their education that we should be working to ensure that they stay here and fill jobs and want to be part of our community. We need to be tireless advocates for sensible immigration policies. And I know that change is hard. But it's our responsibility to lead. It's our responsibility to ensure that the policies that we put in place now and the investments that we put in place really allow our great city to be on a path to growth and success rather than decline and disinvestment. This is something that we discussed at the U.S. Conference of Mayors last week, and it is something that is worrying mayors across the country. So we have to ensure that we're on the leading edge. This city used to have a population of 136,000 people. When somebody stops me on the street and talks about remembering when they could just walk to the Star Market, my response to them is, that's why we need growth. We need to ensure that we are encouraging mixed-use development so that we can have the amenities that are going to attract the workforce that we want here so that we can leave a city that is growing and that is thinking about and future forward for generations to come. So, we're already doing a lot of it. The city of Albany continues to be recognized nationally as a great city for millennials, as a great city for young professionals. We are on the radar for millennials. This is all really, really good news. And we have to make sure that in addition to providing for our residents and helping our seniors to age in place, and we had a great meeting about that with Mike O'Brien and with Joyce Love. We need to ensure that we're focusing on that, but we also need to ensure that we are taking advantage of this opportunity and creating the spaces and places that will allow our city to grow. That's why we're excited about things like continuing to do really well with the REDC, $10 million in 2019, winning the DRI, a transformation that's going to happen in Clinton Square, $10 million of investment that's going to help link neighborhoods, that's going to help improve the look and feel and safety of Clinton Avenue, that is going to create a market collective that will allow entrepreneurs low barriers to entry to get involved in starting new businesses. It's why we need to grow through smart development. It's what was envisioned in our 2030 plan. Bring housing closest to our largest employers. It helps us to take cars off the street and create walkable, vibrant neighborhoods. It's why we're seeing the investment that we're seeing on North Pearl Street. We have an investment that is transforming buildings that we thought would take decades to transform, and it's happening practically overnight. $78 million in investment, 450,000 square feet of space to create new mixed income, and I want to stress that, mixed income apartments, commercial and real retail space and much needed parking. The NIC is already open and getting rented up. CAPREP is underway with its construction of the former Nabisco cracker factory, cracker mill, cracker, whatever. They used to make crackers there, believe it or not. That's a $10 million project where we're building a world-class theater directly across from Ida Yarborough. Transformational. This is the type of thing that we need to be celebrating and ensuring that our residents understand and appreciate. This doesn't happen just anywhere. It's happening here in our capital city. I want to thank Sarah Reginelli for her leadership and all of the economic development efforts that Capitalize Albany has undertaken. Thank you, Sarah. We also need to have fun, right? We need to have fun doing things that residents in our community have loved for years. So we need to make sure that we're vibrant, that we have the types of events that are neighborhood specific and then also regional specific. We look forward to another great year ahead of us of Tulips and Alive at Five, and we think we might have a little surprise about a ninth Alive at Five event that we may be doing in collaboration with our friends at the Albany Symphony Orchestra. Again, looking to create the diversity and the cultural experiences that our residents want. We continue to focus on public art. You know, we had a great, I want to thank Alay Medina, by the way, for her tireless work in ensuring that we have all these events. Public art continues to spring up everywhere. It's sort of like taken on a life of its own. It's really exciting. We have partners in the Albany Parking Authority, Albany Center Gallery, the Downtown Bid, did a second rollout of the ever-popular Nipper Dogs. You know, Amplify Albany has provided grants to neighborhoods throughout the city. I want to encourage you, if you haven't done one in your neighborhood, 2020 is the year. We have generated 31,360 pairs of feet on the street throughout 10 neighborhoods in the city. We've distributed $116,000 for 37 grants. Great ideas for how do we have fun in our communities and our neighborhood. We also have to make sure that we're planning for our future. We live in a time where we know that we're seeing the impacts of global climate change and where we need to ensure we're investing in our infrastructure. That's why our water department is laser focused on looking at every project in the city as an opportunity to take water out of our storm sewer system and retain it through a lot of spirited conversation. The Ramsey, I'm looking at Judy, the Ramsey Place Green Infrastructure Project is finished. I think it's beautiful. We listened to the concerns of the neighborhoods and we ended up with a phenomenal project. You may not realize this, but in the last 6 years, we have spent more on water and sewer infrastructure than was invested in the prior 20 years. That is a tremendous statement about the commitment that we have and our ability when we do the right things and when we make the right decisions about our resources, that we are able to ensure that we're ready for the future. And I want to really commend Joe Coffey and his entire team, all of his engineers, his deputy commissioner, for the amazing work that they've done to really focus on ensuring that we are ready for the future and that we are ready for climate change and that we're ready for growth. Thank you, Joe. But he's got more work to do. So he's just got to clean the Hudson River. So that's what he's working on now. And the Beaver Creek Clean Water Project, again, that is a project that has to be completed by December 15th, 2022, according to our consent order with the Department of Environmental Conservation. We've listened to feedback from the community. It's a less intrusive design. It still includes this amazing park and investment that's happening right next to Toast and across the street from Hackett. So very excited about that project. And we also are ensuring that we have a water supply that is pure and clean for years to come. There is now a permanent preservation of the forest around our reservoirs. We have a partnership with the Nature Conservancy, a conservation easement with Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy, and we got our first check in 2019 for our payment for carbon credits. This is just a win-win-win all the way around. So again, I feel as though our commitment is demonstrated day in and day out with the work that not only our water department is doing, but all of our departments are doing. And I want to, again, thank you for investing in that energy manager who's going to allow us to make sure that we're reporting out to you on the fact that we are hitting on our goals to be a climate smart city. We also are focused on the environment for our residents. I had a meeting yesterday with residents at Ezra, and we continue to work to ensure that we are working with the community to devise solutions, and we have a really great partnership in place, and I'm really excited about working together. And you know, it's no small feat that last year we were able to reduce truck traffic by more than 30% simply through voluntary compliance. And so I'm looking forward to what we can continue to do as we invest in infrastructure to get more of these trucks off the road. We also, with Park Albany, thanks to Matt Peter, now have EV chargers in our garages. We want to be ready for all those electric cars. There were some folks who were talking about a project that may be happening down at the port that could result in 900 new jobs. And there was someone who said, but that's 900 cars. And I said, but if they're all electric, we're still taking greenhouse gases out of the air. So, but we need to have the infrastructure to be able to do it. So thanks, Matt, for your efforts and for your work and partnership with the city. So I know you're saying, Mayor, how on earth do you do all of this? When do you sleep? I don't do this. This is the result of an incredible team of people who are really excited about delivering on making sure that we can grow, but that we can also ensure that we are being good stewards of our taxpayer dollars. We knew that we would have to get more effective and efficient. And when I first started talking about that, I think our employees were afraid that what I meant was that we were going to eliminate jobs. But what I really meant is that we needed to work smarter, that we needed to do more, and that if we were going to build the capacity to create the city that all of us want, we need to be able to get rid of the old ways of doing things, unnecessary steps, unnecessary paperwork, so that we can really focus on delivering on creating a city where every neighborhood works. We continue to be an outstanding lean city with a great lean team that is really now pulled into departments. We used to push them in and tell a department, you need to be leaned, and they kind of thought that maybe that was punishment, and now we have departments who are like, come on, lean me. We need your help. And so it's really exciting to see that transformation. And I want to thank Rachel McEnany for really understanding what it was going to take to build an incredible administrative services team that could deliver on our efficiencies. Anne-Marie Salmon, who is our lean guru, who literally, I think, was still leaning as she was delivering her baby. And Mike Wheeler for his leadership, and all of our incredible administrative services team. They're really inventive, and they want to do their best so that the rest of us can be out there making investments that are going to improve our city. So I'm huge round of applause for them. So I'm going to close with this. We have a lot on our plate for 2020. We are going to be going a million miles an hour. We have to deliver on these projects. We have to build on the success that we've had. We have to show the state and other funders that we can spend this money and get the results that everybody is expecting. But the most important thing for the future of this city that is happening in 2020 is the census. We have to have all hands on deck. I would love each of you to send out to all of your email links, whatever, however you communicate with your constituents, 2020census.gov. We've got to fill these enumerator jobs. They pay $20 an hour, and people can set their own hours, but if we don't have enough people to count, people won't be counted. And we have people in Washington who don't really care if some people in this city get counted. And so we have to take it as our initiative for the year. The rallying cry for the city of Albany is that every single person counts. You know, I remember when I was in 10th grade taking a geometry class, and my teacher said, you know what, girls can't learn. And he made all of us sit in the back of the class. The message to me was that I didn't count. There are people in this community who have that message sent to them almost every day. And so this is hard work. This is about reaching out to people who feel marginalized, people who maybe are afraid because they don't speak English as a first language, people who are here perfectly legally as refugees, but who are confused and frightened by the rhetoric that they're hearing and that they're seeing. And it matters because all of the funding that we get for our roads, for our bridges, for preschool seats, for free and reduced lunch, for the grants that our police department gets, to the grants that we're eligible for, not just by the federal and state government, but also by, you know, various institutions that give out grants. Many of them say you have to be a city of at least 100,000, right? We know we've grown. We know we're growing. Our goal is to get to 100,000. But whether we're at 98,000 or 100,000, I want every single person in this city to be counted. And I want them to know that they count to us. And so I hope that you will work with me to take this as a rallying cry. I hope that every time you're at a neighborhood meeting, you're talking about the census. I hope that you're going to the elementary schools in your wards on those concert nights when we know parents come out to see their kids perform, to make sure that they've been counted. And heck, I may sign on to be an enumerator because, you know, there are enough hours in the day. Go and knock on doors. This is like a campaign, but instead of getting signatures, you are telling people that they count, and you are really laying the roadwork. You are laying the foundation for what this city will be able to accomplish for the next 10 years. So I hope that you will join me in making sure that everyone counts, because you know what? This is a city on the rise. This is a city that's delivering on its promise to be a city where every neighborhood works. And I want to thank you for working alongside me. I look forward to working with this council in 2020 and beyond so that we can ensure that all of our neighborhoods rise. Thank you.